Could this be a coincidence? Only then did he remember that this wasn't the first time he had seen a UFO. There was the incident at the grocery store. He talked to his mum, and learned that she still remembered the incident. She reminded Joe that he had seen it first and pointed it out to her. She still recalls seeing it as a silver disc. "Have you seen anything else?" Joe asked. "Well, yeah," she said, and told him about a dull gray disc that she had seen hovering overhead back in 1958, long before Joe was even born. She was 8 years old, living in her parents' home in Wheeling, West Virginia. She had come home from school and went outside to play with her toys under the tree in the front yard. She had the creepy feeling that somebody was watching her, and looking up, saw a dark football-shaped object hovering overhead. It tilted toward her, revealing itself to be more saucer-shaped. It dropped down from the sky, moving toward her, and she blacked out. What seemed like moments later, she found herself back under the tree, only it was now dark. Knowing she was in deep trouble for being out after dark, she grabbed her toys and ran back inside. Opening the door, she was confronted by her entire extended family, many of them clustered around the family's only phone. Everyone was shocked to see her and rushed over to her. "Where have you been?"
"I've been out front playing under the tree with my toys."
"No, you haven't. Look at the clock." Joe's mother was shocked to see that it was now after 9 o'clock. She had seen the UFO shortly after 3 p.m., which meant that there were 6 hours which she couldn't remember. "Who have you been fighting with?" her mother asked.
"I haven't got in a fight."
"You're lying. Look at your dress." Joe's mother looked down to see that her good dress was covered with blood. She hadn't realized she was bleeding until now, and traced the pathway of the blood up to her nose. She had no explanation to offer her mother, and as a result, received what she called the beating of her life. Following that sighting, her health suffered, and she began to experience jaw pain, headaches and earaches, she told him. Interesting, Joe thought. He had recently suffered from some pretty severe nosebleeds. They were bad enough that Joe sought medical attention. The doctor said, "You've got the most deviated septum I've seen in my life. Have you ever had your nose broken?" Joe has never broken his nose. He later learned that sinus problems are not unusual among abductees. Following the two most recent sightings, he did have a series of dreams about UFOs. They all follow the same pattern. He's walking around outside when suddenly he sees one or more objects in the sky. Often, he's trying to point them out to other people. But these were just dreams. The only other incident was the Flying Saucer House. Although he had done his best to bury the incident in his mind, it kept popping up. And as he thought about it, things started to click together. The round silver-white object on stilts. The round windows. The lack of driveway. For the first time, he wondered, could all that be UFO-related? Could the Flying Saucer House have been a real flying saucer? He remembered having missing time and the car feeling like it was dropped onto the road. He remembered seeing the humanoids, how angry his father had been. And as he meditated more upon the incident, he began to remember other snippets, things he had always remembered but just kind of ignored. There was a lot of emotion attached to these memories, and he found himself unable to deny that something had happened to him. One particular memory that kept surfacing was sitting with his father inside the object. "I didn't want to say I was inside this object," Joe explains. "I didn't know if I was or not, but I did remember this. I remembered looking at my dad, and he was sitting there stone-faced with his hands in his lap. We were in this big white room, and it was round. There was a seat that kind of came out of the wall, and my dad was sitting on it. I was lying on my left side. I think I was on the floor, some type of flat surface, but I was in a fetal position. People were walking around, but I don't remember seeing faces. I just saw up to waist level. I saw long arms, maybe some kind of clothing. I definitely remember seeing the forearm down to about the upper thigh area." Now in his mid-30s, and becoming increasingly concerned about his UFO experiences, he contacted researcher Donnie Sue Blessing, who connected him with Leo Sprinkle.
Joe spoke with Sprinkle, who encouraged him to explore his childhood memories. Sprinkle provided Joe with some meditation techniques which would aid his memory recall. Joe followed Sprinkle's advice and set time aside to simply think about what happened to him. The memories, which had been simmering for years, now boiled over, and Joe was able to reconstruct what happened to him with the Bugman and the Flying Saucer house. Joe asked his mum about it. She still remembered seeing the house and stopping. She remembered going inside. She remembers being upset and coming home late. She can't remember what happened inside. She asked Joe, "Did we get trapped in a haunted house and chased by ghosts?" Joe's sister has no memory of the incident. She jokingly calls her brother UFO Joe, and reluctantly puts up with his interest in UFOs. One day Joe spoke with a neighbor from down the street. Joe mentioned his UFO experiences when the man said he had always wanted to see one. At that moment, a bright light appeared in the sky behind the man. "Turn around," Joe said excitedly. "Look." The two of them observed a bright unconventional object daring around. Finally, it just took off. "Thank you for showing me my first UFO," his neighbor said, obviously impressed. The neighbor was also slightly freaked out. From that day, the neighbor avoided Joe. They never spoke again. At this point, Joe was beginning to see a lot of UFOs. He'd look up in the night sky, and right where he stared, a star-like object would appear, dart around and disappear. This happened many times. Other times, during the day, a flash of light would catch his eyes, and looking up, he'd see a silver cigar-looking craft, which usually promptly disappeared. He noticed a pattern. If he stared at the objects, they'd often remain in view. But if he tried to get a picture, or another witness, if he even so much as blinked, they would disappear. It was a frustrating game of peekaboo, which provided just enough excitement to keep him hooked, but no real answers. After many attempts, Joe was finally successful in obtaining a number of photographs, some of which clearly show an anomalous object. One such incident happened on March 2, 2007. Joe and his friend Mark, pseudonym, decided to try and photograph some UFOs, which had been appearing recently. They had no luck at first, when suddenly Joe heard his girlfriend mentally calling his name. It was a strong mental impression, and Joe felt compelled to rush home. They started to leave. At that moment, a UFO appeared. Mark quickly snapped a few photos of a teeny little disc. Joe's compulsion to return home was now overpowering. They rushed home to find Joe's girlfriend sitting on the couch, hugging the dogs. "Something was here, above the house," she told him. While Joe and his friend had been out looking for UFOs, she felt a sudden impulse to go outside and saw a large, round, dark mass with little lights blinking around the circumference. It was one of Joe's UFOs. When she first met Joe, he had warned her that UFOs follow him around. She thought he was just trying to push her away. He assured her that if they were together, she would soon know the truth. By the time of this sighting, she already knew. But still it was disconcerting. Now, seeing the UFO hovering low overhead, she ran back inside, screaming for Joe to come home. Following this incident, they noticed a strange odor of sulfur in their home. That night, something incredible happened. Joe finally had a follow-up sighting to his 1999 encounter, when he had seen a diamond-like UFO which spoke to him telepathically, saying, "No. Not now." Now, in 2007, only a few hours after this latest sighting, he was relaxing in bed and had just closed his eyes when strange writing began to scroll across his field of vision. His eyes were closed, but still the odd cursive-looking script rolled past. Although he could see it clearly in his mind's eye, he couldn't make any sense of it. "I can't really describe that kind of writing, but it was coming and coming. There was more and more of it. And then at the bottom, I saw a funky-looking gray, but it had a long, backward-sloping head, and it was kind of a greenish color. It had a hand extending toward me. And just to the right of it was that spinning diamond-shaped object that I had seen in 1999. Joe opened his eyes, and the strange vision was gone. He closed them, And there it was again, the strange script, the gray and the diamond-shaped UFO. Says Joe, I couldn't process what I was seeing, so I got up, went to the bathroom. I look out the window and there's this object less than 50 yards away from me. It looked like a glowing red fez hat, bright cherry red. It had a blinking strobe on the bottom of it. Joe left the bathroom and woke up his girlfriend. He expected it to be gone by the time he returned, but there it was. Together they observed the strange object. It appeared to be the size of a very small car, hovering less than 200 feet over the alley behind their house. That's one of them, Joe told his girlfriend. Joe grabbed his phone and called up his friend, Mark, who lived in an apartment across from Joe's residence. Joe told Mark to look outside, that there was a UFO. A weird interference over the phone garbled Joe's speech, but he still made himself understood. Mark grabbed the new digital camera, the same one he had used to capture UFO images only hours ago, and ran to the window. Sure enough, there was the object. He pointed the camera at it, and the power instantly went dead. Mark ran and put in new batteries. The camera was working again. He pointed it at the object, and it went dead. He moved the viewfinder away from the UFO, and the camera returned to normal power. Mike repeated this procedure 3 times. Each time the camera was pointed at the UFO, it went dead. It was clear that the UFO would not allow itself to be filmed. They watched the object for about 20 minutes before it suddenly shrank down and disappeared. 1 month later, on April 3, 2007, Joe had one of the strangest encounters of his life. He and his girlfriend had gone out to eat. As they returned home, a huge dark storm cloud descended over their neighborhood. They rushed home and brought the dogs inside. Joe was in his bedroom when the bedroom light bulb started to pulsate in brightness. At that moment, a huge rushing wind rattled the house. It sounded like a tornado, Joe says, like a thousand rivers. The power to the house went out. Going outside, Joe saw that his entire block was shrouded in darkness. Strangely, it was their block only. Looking upward, Joe saw what he first assumed was lightning, except, Joe explains, there were different colors, pink, orange, blue, violet, and the clouds were so low. It looked like the bottom of a storm front just a couple hundred feet above us. It was really strange. With the power out, the traffic light near their home was also off, and the street in front of their house was backed up with traffic. Horns honked regularly as impatient drivers competed to get through the busy four-way intersection. Joe had a small handheld emergency flashlight. He shined it toward himself to see if it worked. About 600 feet from his house was a large, majestic oak tree. As if in response to his flashlight, a bright pulsating sphere appeared next to the oak. Joe blinked his flashlight 3 times. The single sphere became 3, all of which pulsated brilliantly. Joe's heart raced, almost like he was about to have a panic attack. He shouted for his girlfriend. Why wasn't she coming? The street in front of him was still filled with cars, but nobody seemed to notice the brilliant lights. Joe blinked the flashlight again. I turned the light on and off 3 times, click click click, and immediately the lights appeared in the same sequence in the tree. It was like we were playing Simon Says. I clicked my flashlight on and off, and it would respond in kind. And the 3rd time, it was like time stopped. It was like time stood still. I couldn't move, except for my eyes. I stood still, upright, clutching the flashlight. It was just like click, and everything was frozen. The cars that were in front of my house, they're all gone. Joe could hardly believe what he now saw. It looked like a little, glowing, swirling cloud, rotating counterclockwise, and it's coming down the street. The cloud was strobing or blinking in a weird stop-action pattern, like old-fashioned flip sketch animation. It looked about 6 feet wide, and it's dripping tendrils of fog. Then it comes to rest just in front of my front porch, probably 6 feet away. The entire area was encased in complete silence as the clouds swirled counterclockwise and flattened out to reveal a brilliant blue center. It looked like beautiful emerald water moving in a swirling whirlpool pattern. Lightning-like flashes sparked around the perimeter. Emerging from the center of the pool was a head. Joe instantly saw braids done in a herringbone style. It was a woman, human-looking, but not quite human. She shimmered as she slowly came out of it. I could see the top of the forehead, the face, the eyes. They looked like they were almost dark, blackish, but they were indigo blue or a deep violet color. She had a yellowish-orange diamond in the center of her forehead that was glowing bright. And then as she emerged even further, I could see what looked like a wide, thick necklace, a chest piece almost, just on the top of her breasts, and it was gold, like real gold, 24 carat, and lapis lazuli. It was inlaid gold, lapis all around her neck. Her body, when emerged, stopped right about where the belly button would be. She's half emerged while this whirlpool is spinning, she's got no belly button. She's got no fingernails. She has gold gauntlets on her arms, really wide bracelets. At one point, she extended her hands forward with her palms upward. It was a greeting gesture, arms extended, head raised, and then she tilts her head back with her mouth open. Her mouth was like a black hole. She didn't have a tongue. You didn't see the roof of her mouth. She didn't have any teeth. It was just a black hole. The woman gracefully placed her palms together over her head and began to spin. She then began to move back and forth in a figure eight, infinity pattern across the entire 40-foot length of Joe's front yard. It went really quickly, Joe says. And then she emerged out of it, and there was a bright flash of light like somebody lit off a flash grenade. Everything just lit up bright white. I was almost blind for a second. After that bright flash, she was gone. Everything became normal. All of the cars are back honking in front of my house. Now the porch light is working. The dogs are barking. Joe's girlfriend came rushing out to the porch. She had been trying to cross the living room when she heard Joe calling her name. Suddenly she became unable to move. Finally, her paralysis broke, and she ran outside. She still felt dazed. By then, there was no evidence of what just happened, other than they continued to have electrical problems. Was it an extraterrestrial? Joe doesn't think so. Researching his case, he wonders if it might be better explained as a djinn, a spiritual being with dazzling supernatural powers. There were other strange incidents that had been occurring for years, scratching in the walls, cabinet doors opening and slamming closed by themselves, funky odors, ghostly apparitions, weird sounds. This latest visitation seemed like just another variation of the many other manifestations. In 2011, Joe had another sighting of a glowing object in the shape of an ice cream cone off on the horizon. He sent out a mental message, "I see you up there." The object remained in place, dimming when a plane approached, and then flaring back up. He watched it for about 15 minutes when it disappeared. He checked the next night and it was there again. He verified it with a co-worker, and then the object disappeared. After that, it was gone. Joe no longer records such sightings. There seems to be little to gain from them. The trickster aspect of his encounters no longer fools him. Joe continues to maintain a strong interest in UFOs. As to exactly what they are, his mind remains open. Yes, it might be aliens. More likely, he thinks, he's being contacted by an intelligent entity that is able to manifest in different forms. I think it's the same character wearing different masks, he says, I really do. Joe estimates that he's had somewhere around 30 sightings or encounters, not counting the paranormal incidents. For some reason, he attracts UFOs. To this day, he's not sure why. He does have one memory that he thinks might be significant, and perhaps explain his connection to UFOs. It's hard to talk about because it's so strange. In the memory, Joe is with a group of beings, looking at a viewing screen at an image of Earth. Joe told the group that, although it wasn't his turn, he would go there, he would live on Earth. The group agreed. A pre-life memory as an ET? Joe isn't sure, but as he says, it's a memory. I don't think it's a dream. It's been so strong and persistent, and I've remembered it for so long. Chapter 10, 3 hours on board a UFO. It was around 7 o'clock p.m., on the evening of June 15, 1965, and 14-year-old Ron C. of New Kensington, Pennsylvania was hanging out with his two friends, Peter and Stephen, pseudonyms. On this occasion, they were skateboarding in the alleyway behind Ron's house. Unfortunately for the boys, both Peter and Stephen had curfews, and had to be home by sunset, which at that time was 7 p.m. Darkness had just fallen, and having reached the empty parking lot directly behind Ron's house, the three boys were about to separate and return to their homes for the evening. Ron noticed it first. Hovering only a few hundred feet above the large elm tree at the far corner of the lot was a giant metallic flying saucer. An almost electric thrill of excitement went through his body. "Look!" he shouted to his friends. The three boys stared upward. It was instantly obvious that they were seeing a genuine UFO. They had all heard rumors and stories of other recent sightings in their area, and now it was clear that they were seeing one of the mysterious craft close up. Ron was ecstatic. As he says, "This thing had my full attention and I wasn't about to let it out of my sight for a second, afraid that it might disappear before my eyes. As I shouted for joy at it, I examined it closely. It was beautiful." The object was a classic disc shape, about 200 feet in diameter. It had a dull, bluish-gray, metallic color. On top was a smooth, rounded dome. Underneath the craft, Ron could see a round light, pulsating from bright red to a deep, dark red at half-second intervals. It protruded out a few feet from the rest of the craft, and reminded Ron of a red bike reflector, with the same bumpy texture. The most interesting part of the UFO, however, was a large, panoramic window which had appeared on the front dome of the craft. Says Ron, "I could see into it through a window that looked as if the blue-gray metal had opened up by making that part of it transparent. There were no hard edges or frame like a regular window. It was as if it was all part of the ship, but that part of it was see-through." Through the suddenly transparent portion of the craft, Ron was incredibly excited to see the dark silhouettes of two human-looking figures staring directly back at him. Says Ron, "They appeared human. One was taller than the other. I could only see silhouettes though. I could only see them from the waist up. They didn't look like the grays so often described. They just looked like regular humans peering out at me." Ron reacted quickly. He lifted his arm up and began waving at them. He instantly felt a strong connection with whoever was in the craft. Says Ron, "I felt that they were reading my mind, and that I was being acknowledged when I waved my hands to get their attention. They seemed to acknowledge me and my friends, and I felt a peaceful feeling about them. They made me feel very comfortable, as if they were my friends and would not harm me." At this point, Ron turned to look at Peter and Steve. He wanted to make sure that they were also seeing this incredible sight. Says Ron, "They were gazing up at it also. I commented to them, 'We are actually seeing a real UFO.' They looked as if they were paralyzed. They didn't move at all, and were just staring up at it. I couldn't understand why they weren't as excited as me. They were transfixed on it, but did not comment. They just stared at it with a blank expression. I kept saying to them, 'It's a real UFO, do you see it?' But they wouldn't answer. They just stood there as if hypnotized. And I was so excited about it that I didn't let it bother me much." Ron's attention returned to the craft. As he waved, he began thinking how cool it would be if he could have a little ride on board the ship. Says Ron, "I waved with both hands, thinking in my mind that I wanted them to take me for a ride. I really did want to ride in it, and I knew that they knew what I wanted. I wanted a ride so bad, I practically begged them." The three boys stood there watching the craft. To Ron, it was the most exquisitely beautiful thing he had ever seen, and he ached to go inside of it. Says Ron, "I stood there about a minute, or at least it seemed like a minute. I could see both my friends on either side of me still just staring at this beautiful object. Then the next thing I remember is watching this UFO leaving me. I was completely turned round, facing the opposite way, waving goodbye to it. My two friends were now together to the right of me, still looking into blank space as I was waving goodbye at it. They were facing the same way as they were in the beginning, still gazing, but this time it was empty space. They were just staring up at nothing, as if they were paralyzed. The UFO was now smaller because it was higher up in the night sky. I thought it was very strange because I was facing a different direction than my two buddies. I could see them out of the corner of my eye as I was waving goodbye to it. I didn't want it to go. I heard them say goodbye to me in my mind, as if they knew I needed that. In a matter of seconds, the object accelerated out of sight, leaving a multicolored trace of light, curving up into the sky and disappearing, it seemed, behind the moon. Ron felt an incredible wave of emotion sweep over him. The overriding emotion was awe and excitement. As he says, I knew that I was a witness to the most extraordinary event that I would ever see with my two eyes. However, mixed with this excitement was a powerful feeling of loneliness and poignant sorrow. Says Ron, I was very saddened by the UFO leaving, but also at peace as I waved goodbye to it. It was a lonely type of feeling, as if saying goodbye to good friends. I felt very satisfied, and yet sad. Ron was flushed with excitement and he turned to his friends to see what they thought of this incredible experience. Did you see that? He said. Steve and Peter looked back at Ron with puzzled looks on their faces. See what? Ron's mouth dropped open. The UFO! He exclaimed. Didn't you see it?
I didn't see anything, Peter said.
Me either, Steve replied.
I didn't see anything. At first, he thought they were just joking or teasing, but they weren't. Neither of his friends had any memory whatsoever of the UFO or the occupants. It seemed impossible, and the enigma left Ron speechless. Peter looked down at his wristwatch. To his shock, the dial read 10:00 p.m. 3 hours had suddenly passed, as if in an instant.
Oh, no! Peter cried. I am going to get in big trouble.
Why? Ron asked.
It's 10:00.
What? Steve said. I'm going to get killed for being so late. They turned to run home at top speed. Why don't they remember? Ron stood there and wondered. Could I have imagined this whole thing? He shouted out to his friends, I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll come over early the next morning to talk about it. They didn't acknowledge him, and continued running home. Ron was only 50 feet away from his back door. He walked back inside. His mom sat at the kitchen table. She wasn't overly concerned because during the summer months Ron was allowed to stay out until 10, though he usually wasn't this late. She asked him, where have you been?
Skateboarding, he replied.
He then proceeded to tell her the entire UFO story, including the 3 hours of missing time. To Ron's relief, she didn't seem surprised, and she listened intently as he told his story. After he finished, she didn't say anything, except that it was time for Ron to go to bed. As he lay there in bed, Ron went over the experience in his mind. He couldn't wait for morning, so he could go and talk to Steve and Peter. He wanted to relive what was to him the most fantastic experience of his life. The next morning, he woke up early and ran directly over to Peter's house. Peter came to the front door and told Ron that he was in big trouble, and wasn't allowed outside for the rest of the day. Ron asked him about the UFO, and again Peter told him that he didn't remember seeing any UFO. They weren't allowed to play together either, so Peter shut the door. Ron stood at the doorstep in shock. He ran quickly over to Steve's house. Steve was also grounded, and he also told Ron that he had no memory of any UFO encounter. By now, Ron was beginning to panic. As he says, I was beside myself. I thought I was going crazy. I ran home. I knew I wasn't crazy. I knew I saw it, and I couldn't deny it. It was clear in my mind, as if it had just happened. Ron was emotionally shaken by the dilemma. He knew that he had seen an actual UFO. It wasn't a hallucination. It couldn't have been a dream. He was awake. But then why couldn't his friends remember? They were right there with him. Ron went to his mother and said sadly, my friends don't remember seeing the UFO. His mom looked up from the newspaper she was reading and with a smile she said, don't worry about it, Ronnie. Your UFO made the front page. She held up the newspaper. The article described how several residents of New Kensington had watched the UFO as it traveled slowly over town. Ron jumped up and down with joy. See, Mum? He cried.
I told you I wasn't lying. I saw the UFO. I really did see it. Relief washed over him. He wasn't crazy. Other people had seen it too.